Welcome to MGO Podcast 5.19, probably. Are you basking? Are you a lizard on a rock on a sunny day? This is what you should be doing. You should be on a rock, basking, soaking it in. Jordan Morgan, other people, bask! So they raised a banner for the third straight year at Chrysler.
Not quite yet.
They didn't raise the banner.
They didn't raise the banner. They cut the net.
They cut the net.
No banner yet.
Because they want to make sure that next year's UMass Amherst game is well attended.
Absolutely.
But there was confetti. There was a lot of confetti. And we have strong reports from the scene that Dave Brandon did not cut the net this time, unlike...
unlike 2 years ago.
Unlike 2 years ago. Which I did not know that that had happened. I don't know how that had escaped, because that's just perfect.
It adds to the pile of perfect Dave Brandon
but
stories.
Let's not talk about that or hockey, because Michigan is 15-3 despite playing Illinois, Penn State, Northwestern, and Ohio State at Ohio State as their single plays. Almost the toughest conceivable Big Ten schedule, which they go 15-3 against. You get an outright championship by two games after losing Mitch McGarry midseason. Oh, and by the way, Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway, two of the top rookies in the NBA this year who left early. Just a superlative job by Beilein, by Jordan Morgan, by
everybody
except... No, I'm just kidding.
It's like, oh, God.
you look terrified. I was going to say like Andrew Dockage, but no, Andrew Dockage has been critical this year.
And he had a great catch under the basket on that that last the end of half shot. That
Andrew Dockage has in fact been filled the JMO void, not the JMO void, the J Bart void impeccably. Yes.
Although Beilein in the post-game press conference actually talked about how Mitch McGarry has done a great job of stepping into the role of hype-up walk-on.
Yeah.
And he invoked Corey Person, Esso Okune, and J Bart and... extolling the virtues of McGarry's bench enthusiasm.
So even the bench mob has come through this year as Michigan waltzes. Can we say waltzes?
I mean, they've cleared it by two games, I would say so.
As Michigan waltzes to its first outright Big Ten title since 1986 when I was 7 years old and Ace was a fetus.
Not even. No. December of 87, man.
You'll be surprised, but you were a fetus for a really long time. I didn't want to tell you
I was incubating for a while.
Yeah, it was... It's really awkward for all of us 7-year-olds watching it on television. Wow, that got weird.
It's got bizarrely Truman Joe'd.
All right, we should talk about the Indiana game, which was extraordinarily frustrating for the
large swaths, really.
The whole thing. They shot 71% from two, and it's good that Michigan won. I just don't know how that happens when you're 4 or 15 from three, and you're letting the other team do that, and you win the game. How does that happen? Hashtag
a nice little gap in turnovers and offensive rebounding, at least in terms of the raw numbers. The percentages favor Michigan slightly, but not
yes, because Indiana couldn't miss any shots.
Yeah, because Indiana didn't miss shots, but Michigan created just enough extra possessions for themselves and to eke out a victory there.
So the 1-3-1 switch was, I think, probably
a Beilein
the
master stroke. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to call it a master stroke when it's just what you absolutely have to do, because every other possession that you have in the man defense is giving up a dunk to Troy Williams.
And he said in the post game that he was, I think he's always a little hesitant to go to the 1-3-1 because he hates giving up threes, because I mean, we all know his offensive philosophy. So his defensive philosophy kind of falls in line with that. And 1-3-1, I mean, one of the first possessions, Michigan broke it out in the first half. Yogi Ferrell just drills an open three because no one's out on the wing.
Right. And actually, that was probably going to be a offensive rebound anyway, because three people ran it at Yogi Ferrell, which is not good when one of those guys is your center and you've got two smaller guys under the basket.
Yeah. I mean, you want to contest shots, but you do also want to make sure that it's not just a guaranteed 2 points if he misses.
Right.
But Indiana, which is a normally turnover team, only had three turnovers in the first half when Michigan's playing mostly man. They have 12 in the second half when Michigan's playing almost exclusively 1-3-1.
And that's the game.
That's the whole thing right there.
And so you couldn't worry about whether the 1-3-1 was going to give up good shots because,
it was happening anyway, so you might as well get the ball back on some of them.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe not a masterstroke, but a move that had to be made. One thing I wonder about is, do they not have a 2-3 at all? Because Indiana is the kind of team where you would pull out the 2-3 and they would kind of look around and maybe hit themselves in the face.
I don't really think they've got it. I mean, we know Indiana doesn't do well against the 2-3. But every time Michigan's broken it out for like a possession here or there a few times this year. And it seems like every time they do it, they just get a 3-pointer on their face or give up an easy bucket because it doesn't seem like they just really know how to play it very well.
I know, but if you're encouraging guys to shoot, anyone except Farrell is absolutely fine on this team.
That's true.
I mean, he's been shooting better these days, but you know, I'm not really terrified of Ashihi 3. Versus Troy Williams was 8 of 9, and I don't think he shot a jump shot. He probably shot one jump shot, and that's a 9. So, I mean, the defense is just, I think we can call it worrying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they did win a game when the opponent had 1.23 points of possession, which is good that they could win the game, but
it was a 66.3 effective field goal percentage.
That's out of this world. I mean, I think we found Indiana as the archetype for who Michigan does not want to play in the tourney, but we'll talk about that in a separate section. Other notable events from this game, Beilein got a technical. Finally, it was coming all season, and he finally got one, probably for yelling something like, that's ham blasted pot stickers. Am I having a stroke? Possibly. I'm having a stroke because Michigan is 15-3 in the Big Ten, but... I can't blame the guy because he had just watched Spike Albrecht get absolutely demolished with no call. And then I think it was Stanford Robinson traveled 4 to 5 times.
Yeah, it took several steps immediately following.
He traveled before he put the ball down. He traveled after he put the ball down, and then he scored. Michigan had just had Caris LeVert hit a 3, and that was wiped away because of a very, very bad reset the shot clock call by this yob. That's my term for people who are incompetent in enraging fashion.
So all of college basketball officials.
They are all yobs. I was at an airport, which is a peak yob. But anyway, so he gets a technical, and there's obviously a makeup call the next time down the floor. And the officiating man is just, after the game, he said something like, it's hard on coaches now. And I know exactly what he's talking about because they broke the charge call.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it anymore.
We have.
I think we've discussed this at every basketball related podcast.
Entered the podcast section that is just. I just have written down standard charge bitch at this point,
and off we go.
Yeah, so you know it's bad when Jordan Morgan takes a charge, and I'm like, that is not even close to a charge. Where it was in the 1-3-1, and he's moving over as the guy's coming down from his jump. This is the one where Troy Williams hit his head on, I think, Tarik Walton and got hurt. And that was the blockiest charge that's ever been, and they still call it. Meanwhile, Spike Albrecht is getting annihilated. Like, he's getting run over.
It's like cartoon getting hit by train level. I mean, he goes flying from one side of the circle clear beyond the baseline.
Right.
On the other side.
I mean, it looks like a Duke flop, but it's not a Duke flop. It's just that he's a tiny man being hit by a very large man moving at a high rate of speed. And they just need to change it. As long as you're moving laterally and you get there before the guy takes off, if you get plowed in the chest, it's a charge. Anything else is a block. None of the feet. Nothing. It's just where you take the contact. Are you square?
So you'd advocate getting rid of the circle and allowing the Novakian under the basket.
The circle does need to remain. But other than the circle, I don't think feet should be relevant at all. It's just, are you square? Is the guy in the air already? Are you?
And that's it. Period. Yeah. End it there.
Yeah.
Don't make it any more complicated because the officials clearly cannot handle that.
No, they cannot. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Anyway,
There's so many good things to talk about.
Yes, we are exiting standard Jarge Bitch section of the podcast to talk about Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, Jordan freaking Morgan.
Who had a game on his senior night, basically single-handedly keeping Michigan in the game early when Indiana literally could not miss. He finishes the game 7 of 8. He's got a double-double with 5 offensive rebounds. And, you know, we have complained as a fan base about Jordan Morgan's finishing for probably, 7 years?
It feels like 18 at this point.
And I have never been a participant in this because I look at the stats and I'm like, okay.
You see the numbers.
For a below-the-rim guy, that's kind of incredible. And in this game, he was really finishing. I mean, he's putting out the ball on the deck for a bounce and then getting around Vonleh. He was putting it off the window at difficult angles and it's still going in. It was, you know, for a guy who has no athleticism, that was kind of a masterclass on how you get the layups up after your offensive rebounds.
Yeah, Beilein was very complimentary of his pivoting after the game, which you don't necessarily hear every day.
I love John Beilein.
But, I mean, you get all these dump downs to Morgan where he's below the basket, and one thing that they emphasized, and which is what they did when they went to him on the very first possession, where it was very obvious. I mean, you almost never see a Michigan post player repost, but Jordan Morgan reposted on the first possession because Indiana was switching everything like they did in the first game. Morgan ends up on a guy smaller than them. You go to that matchup down low and you just let him go to work. And I mean, we haven't seen much of his back to the basket game, but his ability to just catch the ball down low and then just find the correct angle before he goes up to go for the layup. I mean, sometimes it's a little infuriating when he gets the ball and it looks like he has just an open, just go right up with it. And he hesitates a little bit and tries to go to the other side, but it's a way to make up for his lack of explosive vertical leaping. And it worked really well. I mean, he made every move that he made under the basket seemed to be the right one.
Michigan adjusted to what Indiana showed them in the first game. I mean, we saw Nick Stauskas post up for an easy bucket against a guy who's probably 8 inches shorter than him.
Yogi Ferrell tried to front him, and that did not work.
No, and there were a couple other instances where Yogi Ferrell didn't try to front him, but they're down on the post, and Stauskas just gets the ball and immediately goes up without anything resembling a contest from Ferrell. And that reminds me of the second Michigan State game, where Michigan took the things that they knew Michigan State was going to do and backcut them to death.
Yeah.
So the adjustment from game one to game two in terms of getting what you want really speaks well to Beilein's offensive ability. Not that anyone is ever questioning that except apparently Comperoni, who called Michigan's offense YMCA ball.
That guy.
Like, okay, you know, I get the criticism of, like, you know, they're not tough enough. They're not good on defense. They can't rebound. Those things may or may not be true, but calling Beilein's offense YMCA ball is just...
Sign me up for that YMCA. Come on.
Oh, God. Anyway, also on positive things, Glenn Robinson, is he on a tear? I don't think he's on a tear.
It's approaching the level of tear-like. I mean, he scored 20 points against Indiana and had probably 13, 12, 17, and 15 preceding that. I mean, it's been consistent and productive from him.
And he hit the key shot in this game, which was the corner three where you're like, well, I guess you have to take that. I hope you hit it at better than a 21% rate, which you're averaging in Big Ten play, and then it just splashes down.
Mm-hmm.
So is he on a tear?
He's on a tear.
And he got to the line 4 times, although one of those I think was intentional at the end of the game. He's shooting 50% from inside the line in this game. So another consistent, efficient game. The only problem, I guess, is that he's only got 2 rebounds, but there weren't really many rebounds to go around in this game.
No. And with Morgan doing the work he was doing on the glass, especially, there wasn't a whole lot. And Caris LeVert continues to be a pretty solid defensive rebounder, too. So Robinson's rebounding has kind of been mitigated, not necessarily because of what he's doing, but because of what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, so, I mean, as Glenn continues to be there and at least relatively efficient most of the time, in this game particularly efficient, he even had a couple assists. I mean, that's how you beat some team that's got 1.2, 3 points in possession, is when you've got everybody working in sync.
Yeah, and let's be clear. When we say Glenn Robinson is there, he's taken aside from when Zach Irvin's on the court, he has the highest shot percentage of anybody on the team right now in terms of percentage of shots he takes when he's on the floor. It's above LeVert. It's above Stauskas. They're just all at the basket. And he's got just an outrageous field goal effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage because it's a bunch of twos. I mean, if he cut out the threes, it'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the way I always approach that is I mentally think of Robinson as just kind of the guy on the end. Like, Morgan does not, even when he's got eight buckets in this game, when the things that he's doing are generated by other people, I kind of mentally give that shot to whoever created the shot. Like the Walton ridiculous assist where he's in the air and Glenn's cutting the basket. Glenn should get credit for cutting the basket, but...
And I think he deserves more credit for his ability to move off the ball and his sense for when to cut and what. I think he's got that down pretty well.
The quiet 15 that we got used to last year.
That's true, but I think there's something to be said for an ability to consistently put up that quiet 15 the way he does. That I think people kind of discount that and say that those are his teammates, but there's something to it where, I mean, when Zach Irvin comes in and takes that spot, you're not getting nearly as many good looks around the basket with him. Now, they play him differently, obviously.
A little bit, yeah. he's gotten to the point where I'm just like, well, that's going up. That's going up. That is definitely going up.
He's taking 26% of the team shots when he's on the floor. Everything's going up when he gets the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, that's we're going to see if that one goes in, and they tend to. But I think in, say, the last four or five games, he's been moving beyond the quiet 15.
Yes.
In this game, he's driving to the basket, and unlike many times earlier this year where he's been driving to the basket, he's getting to the basket.
He made a move to his left and finished with his left from the top of the key on a dribble drive.
Skynet is self-aware. But he's moving past that phase, you know, where he's obviously present because you're looking at someone on the offense and saying, hey, someone do something. And sometimes that guy is Glenn Robinson. Which was not the case, I think you could say, throughout the entirety of his career until now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it took a while, but to see that development as Michigan is approaching tourney time is good for all purposes except maybe keeping Glenn Robinson around next year.
And I think we were probably headed in the that's not happening direction anyway. So.
Well, I mean, we'll see. He's not on draft boards right now, so we will hope that he plays just as well as he can to come back for a third year and then just to be a Naismith winner next year. But anyway, free throws were a factor. I can't say that they made the game closer than they should have been because Michigan was 26-29. Stauskas was 8 of 9. So he got enough free throws where his one miss did not enrage me. Actually, it still did.
I'm sure it always does. It does every time.
It's just like, why did you do that? But I still have to point out that Sanford Robinson got 9 free throw attempts. He's a 55% shooter, and he hit all of them. And Michigan really has to shore up that free throw defense. Yeah,
it's just awful.
It's brutal.
There was I have to relay that there was an Indiana fan, a very loud one, behind the press area who before literally every single Michigan free throw up until he forgot one late. Would just scream miss at the top of his lungs when everything was quiet. And first of all, he kept doing this despite the fact that Michigan went 26-29. he was like 2-28 on the ones he called out, and Michigan rebounded one of them.
Oh, that's right.
and then there was a Michigan fan who started responding with shut up every time he yelled miss and timed it perfectly right. Like it would be like every time right as the free throw was going in. And it was beautiful. But I admired this guy's persistence because
really?
He kept going up until the bloody end with this thing.
I would kick those people out if I was in charge of the athletic department.
Yeah, it was annoying as all hell. Yeah.
Like there was that ululating. Is that the right word? Yes. The ululating.
How am I supposed to know if it's the right word if you can't even say it, man?
All right. The lady at the Michigan State game who was just like ululating the whole time whenever there was a free throw. That lady has to go. Like that's not happening on my home court.
You're
you know?
Taken away from the experience in a way that's really significant there when you have to deal with that.
I just she's annoying and I don't want my home games to be annoying. I heard that was a parent of a Michigan State player, which would have been even better. Just like, you got to go now. Speaking of Michigan State, Tom Crean shoved a player in this game. He shoved his own player, and they just kind of looked at it. And then the rest of that possession, the official was boxing Crean out so he wouldn't get on the floor. And I'm just, they got to do something about this.
Yeah. Anybody surprised that Tom Crean coached under Tom Izzo? Are we shocked about this?
I just, V-line has already got a technical at this point, and you've got a guy on the floor affecting the play. And
early in the game, he'd played some excellent help defense on Stauskas. I mean, it's time to get hit for a technical for that.
I really don't understand why Michigan doesn't even try. Like, see what happens if you just crush the guy.
Again, Jordan Morgan should just come out and set a pick on one of these coaches.
I mean, it's always Stauskas because Stauskas is on that side of the floor. That's where he starts the offense. I think you should just start every offensive possession by running down the sideline, seeing if he can clip a coach and see what happens.
Because worst case scenario, you just knock down Tom Crean and exactly. Everybody loves you.
Yeah. So they got to do something about it, though. It's getting out of hand. And it just symbolizes all the things that are wrong with basketball refereeing, where it's like sometimes it's a foul and sometimes it's not a foul. And we'll give this guy this thing and this guy this other thing. It's just completely arbitrary.
We've come back around.
We
still have good things to talk about.
Tom Crean shoved a player.
He did, and it needs to be noted. And also, he's Tom Crean, so screw that guy.
All right, in happier Tom Crean news, Indiana is down 3 points at the end of the game. They don't trap the ball. They foul with 17 seconds on the shot clock, giving Michigan 20 seconds of just Spike Albrecht looking around waiting to be fouled.
I wanted to say, in fairness to Crean, he was motioning for his team to foul, but at the same time, that's his team out there.
That is his team.
Good job, Tom Crean.
His team that is in the 300s in turnover rate. Just like when you have the dumbest team in the league, that's your fault. I mean, would a Beeline team ever do something like that? No.
In other fun Tom Crean stuff, the Big Ten Network put up this graphic yesterday that I just have to read in full because it's glorious. Last night represented Indiana's fifth loss when leading by 10-plus points in conference play, the most in the Big Ten this season. It was their seventh loss when tied or leading at halftime, which is somehow only the second most in the Big Ten this season. And their 59.2 field goal percent was the highest in a loss in the last 18 seasons of Indiana basketball.
Well, of course. I don't like that last one, actually.
The last one's enjoyment from Indiana Schadenfreude's circumstance and not necessarily from the Michigan fandom standpoint, but I enjoyed it anyway. Especially since they accompanied it with a picture of Crean just with this 1,000-yard stare while he's kneeling on the sideline.
Ah, Clappy. Hate you, Clappy. Hate you, Clappy.
But the Fuller's picture of him hiking up his pants is now just, I mean, can that be like the site banner for a day?
No, I mean, it's
glorious.
I will mandate that any mention of Indiana basketball will have to be accompanied by that picture.
Oh, that's going to be the picture in the preview from now until the end of time.
That is going to be the Indiana picture.
Crean cannot be the coach there anymore, and it'll still be the picture for Indiana basketball.
We're going to have to Photoshop that on Indiana's helmets, like for football season.
He's kind of making an eye, so it works.
Clappy. Oh, God. All right. We're going to take a break now. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Big Ten tourney and potential tourney opponents that we would like to see or not like. Wear some colored yellow uniform. Sky is burning, but at least you know it warm. Going on yourself a million miles, hoping that the colors are not. And you grow up like that. Get out of my style. Leave a little window. Get out of my style. You can never see yourself ringing all around it. You can never see yourself ringing all around it. You can never see yourself ringing all around it. You can never see yourself ringing all around it. So, tourney talk. Michigan is the number one seed in the Big Ten tourney by 2 games.
Hey-o.
And they will play either Indiana, Minnesota, or Illinois in the first round. It would take a Minnesota loss to Penn State as we are talking about this, which is unlikely for Minnesota to be in that. So it's probably Indiana or Illinois. And I have an idea of who I would prefer.
I think we all do.
And of course, it would be Illinois, the team that just kind of got imploded by Michigan, lives on their defense and does not do very well on offense. in terms of teams I want to see or don't want to see, I do not want to see drivers. I want to see a defensive-oriented team that struggles to put the ball in the basket.
And Illinois is that team. Although they did manage to put the ball in the basket plenty of times against Iowa yesterday because Iowa has stopped playing defense entirely.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's happened. Well, I do because they've gone to the zone a lot. And Patrick Vint on Twitter has been raging and posting very compelling stats about how the zone has just been a complete disaster for them. So that is what has happened to Iowa's defense. And then in the second round, Michigan likely draws Nebraska.
The four seed in the Big Ten tournament. My God.
But that could be Iowa as well. Given how Iowa is playing, it seems kind of doubtful. And then you get the Michigan State-Wisconsin half of the bracket, a potential final. So this sets up better than I can remember for Michigan to actually reach the final, which I don't think they've done since they won the inaugural Big Ten tournament.
Yeah.
So really? It's been a long time.
With Lewis Bullock as their point guard.
Oh, man. Don't even.
Sometimes I have to remind myself because, you know, they've come a long way.
The look on my face that you cannot see is amazing.
It is.
Dear listeners. And I had mentioned that I didn't really care what Michigan did in the Big Ten tournament, and I would have even been okay with them losing early because it wouldn't affect their seed line, probably. And, you know, there's that meme out there about how you don't want to play all the way through the Big Ten tourney because you will be tired and then you will crash out of the NCAA tournament. Some users on the site have poked around at that, and there was an excellent diary that went up that demonstrated that that's pretty much just an urban myth. So teams either meet expectations or exceed expectations about as many times as they fail to meet them when they win the Big Ten tourney.
Which makes sense when you consider that at worst you're getting 4 days off. And after a regular season, you know, unless you haven't managed your lineup very well throughout the year. And Beilein actually also talked about this last night about how he kind of learned from how much he played Zach and Stu down for the entire season and especially down the stretch to get that Big Ten title a couple of years ago. And then he wouldn't quite pin the Ohio loss in the NCAA tournament on this, but he did say that he felt how much he had leaned on those guys contributed to the fact that they didn't quite have it in the NCAA tournament.
I don't know. I just think that's probably bad luck. Because, I mean, 4 days off after a game is forever for these guys.
Oh, I'm saying, but I would say the cumulative effects of just how much they were playing. I mean,
Sound a little bit like Tom Izzo right now.
Trey Burke played 89% of the team's minutes that year. Novak was at 83 as a 6'4" power forward. I mean, there were just some things that were.
But Michigan's doing the same thing with their big guns this year. I mean,
they've managed it just to.
Do you really think 2 or 3 minutes in a basketball game is that much of a difference?
Over the course of a season, I would say how they handled their lineup, I think, has been pretty impressive this year. I mean, there are those stretches where Stauskas is sitting out, and you go, why is Stauskas sitting out? And then over the course of the season, you realize
those stretches are like 2 minutes long.
There have been some first half stretches where it's like a solid 5-6 minutes where he's on the bench and LeVert just takes over for a while and they let that ride.
I disagree with you completely here. I mean, there have been those stretches, but they were those stretches when Stauskas was being very ineffective.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I would say it's also been when Stauskas has just.
All right, look up his minutes on Kempom. Do it right now.
He's at 84.4. 84%
versus 89% is like 2 minutes a game.
And over the course of the season, I would say that adds up. A fair amount.
Yes, it adds up to nothing.
That's some interesting math.
In terms, all right, whatever.
I'd say over the course of 30 games, that means something.
I would disagree strenuously, and I think we're just going to have to move on.
Yeah.
Tom Izzo.
I'm not making excuses. I'm saying I think
you are. You're making excuses for the Ohio game.
Well, first of all, Beilein was the one who made it, so I am just relaying what the coach said, and I'm also saying that I think he's done a very impressive job of managing the rotation this year, where nobody has taken on this insane workload and seems to be petering out towards the end of the year, like Michigan did that year.
All right, now we are seriously going to move on. This is about to erupt into Queensbury-style fisticuffs. But anyway, as we were mentioning about the Big Ten tourney, it doesn't seem like it has much of an impact on your NCAA's performance. So
Might as well win the thing.
Yeah, might as well win the thing. And then it does take on importance because if Michigan can beat Wisconsin, or Wisconsin goes down to Michigan State in the semi, then they can probably get ahead of Wisconsin. And that gets them into the nice territory where they might be with Villanova or Wichita State as the one seed in their division. And they'll be out of the West with Arizona, which is like the one place I don't want to be, because all those other regional places are nicely accessible.
Yes.
And Anaheim, not so much. So outperforming Wisconsin in the tournament actually has some very good effects for where Michigan ends up and who they get, end up playing.
And doing better than Wisconsin is something we'd all like to see.
So I think that I am now super invested in the Big Ten tournament, such as it is, and we should win it. This is not a controversial opinion.
I will agree with this.
All right.
It's a standpoint.
We've moved past the arguing with each other part to the just agreeing on totally insipid things.
Yes.
Winning is good, Ace.
Winning is very good.
I disagree. I think it's just good. No. So in terms of tourney opponents that Michigan could be facing, Jerry Palm has an interesting bracket up, which is, means nothing at all because everything is going to change. But anyway, he has Michigan with Vermont in the first round. And then if high seeds hold, they would play VCU, San Diego State, and Arizona. So
up until that last bit, a pretty favorable draw.
I would enjoy that a great deal. It's a very storyline heavy draw because, of course, Michigan is part of Vermont. No. Because Michigan, of course, blew out VCU last year.
Yes.
And some guy named Steve Fisher coaches San Diego State. So obviously that VCU matchup is one that I would treasure. I would clutch it to my heart.
Because opponents that rely on forcing turnovers against Michigan are just asking for death.
Yeah. So I love the VCU matchup. San Diego State obviously doesn't have that kind of huge athleticism that I think gives Michigan trouble, and Arizona is a problem. But
although a little bit less of a problem than when Michigan faced them the first time around, because they were missing one Brandon Ashley.
Yeah, but they're still
really good.
How many missed putbacks were there in that game? 45.
That's true. So, and that was at home.
Yeah. So not really digging the Arizona amongst the one seeds. Not really digging Florida either, even though Michigan put the Spurs to Florida last year. Just because, I mean, they're 28-2. They are in the SEC. One of the losses was to Wisconsin without three starters. So in terms of a complete lineup, they haven't lost except once this year. And I know the SEC is trash, but they're a higher level than the Missouri Valley, certainly.
Yeah, and that last loss was on December 2nd. This team is just doing work right now.
And they're just blowing people out.
Yeah, and when you watch them play, it's not any one guy. It's that whole team, just the way they've
got
together.
Four crazy senior balance. Starters, yeah. Which is kind of unheard of these days. So Florida is not a team that I would treasure like I would treasure VCU. Basically, any of the other potential one seeds I would like Michigan to get in, which means at this point climbing up into the 5 or 6 spot on the S-curve, which is possible, especially if Palm's right about Duke, who he has as a 4 seed. Had him as a 5 before the North Carolina game. So,
yeah, and they've been pretty consistently dropped down to the 3 line in the most recent bracket updates.
Yeah, so Michigan's got to hop a couple teams. One of them could be Wisconsin. So just stay out of the West, hopefully avoid Florida's bracket. Those are the main things.
Hope Virginia loses in the ACC tournament a little early.
Yeah. And then, you know, in terms of teams that I don't want to see, New Mexico is one of those other 7 seeds, and that seems a lot more dangerous than a VCU team for Michigan. Kentucky is now dropping into that range, and no. I mean, even though Kentucky looks like total butt.
If it all comes together for that team, they're the worst possible matchup, really, with that combination of talent. Who's guarding Julius Randle, for one?
Well, and you just don't want to see Kentucky because their best game is a lot higher than any other potential second-round matchup's best game.
Yeah, their best game is up there with any team in the country's best possible game.
I think the ideal thing is for Kentucky to drop to the 8 seed in Michigan's region.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be terrific. And then Creighton, I'm kind of torn on Creighton because they don't play defense, but they do shoot a ton from the outside. You know, you got McDermott in there. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that one too, because their offense terrifies me, but their defense does the opposite of that.
I mean, generally I want to play a bad defensive team, or at least a bad shooting team, and Creighton is not that.
Yeah, not at all. They are incredible shooting teams, so that's worrisome, but I don't know, Michigan getting into a shooting contest. That just seems like such a coin flip game that it would not be fun. It'd be fun for everybody but the fan bases of the two teams involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, I would really love a Syracuse matchup at this point. They struggle on offense. They play that zone, but this year their guards are so much shorter than they were last year.
Yeah.
So Cooney's like 6'3", and then Ennis is 6'2".
And that's a big drop off from 6'6" point guard Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah, and their shooting guard last year was usually 6'6" as well. So they were absolutely enormous. Michigan had some trouble shooting over them because a lot of the shooting came from a 6'1" point guard. And this year, you know, you've got Stauskas and LeVert who can just pull up and go over those guys. And, you know, they're losing to Boston College. They're losing to Georgia Tech. I mean.
And their interior offense is kind of, they're 14th in the ACC in 2-point field goal percentage.
Wow. I mean, that's a struggle. Yeah. And if you look at their record, like they were undefeated for a long period of time, but that's because they were doing things like beating NC State by 2 points, beating Pitt by 2 points.
And now they've lost 4 of the last 5.
So, I mean, in terms of a profile that I want to see as a potential Sweet 16 matchup, Cuse is it.
Yeah, I think in terms of a team that is both free-falling and matches Michigan's style in a way that works for Michigan,
yeah,
Syracuse is that team.
And then the other team in that bucket is Cincinnati. They've got one big scorer, and they've got not that much shooting. They're very defensively oriented. That's the kind of team that I think Michigan could overwhelm their defense and have their offense win that game, even though they're kind of a shaky defensive club.
Yeah, and their one big scorer is a 6'4 shooting guard, and Michigan can stick. Michigan's got the. I mean, they're not. They don't have a lockdown defender to throw on anybody.
But I was about to say.
In terms of opposing players, if you're going to have an opposing guy team have a star that carries the load, you'd much rather have it be a perimeter guy than say like Julius Randle.
I don't think Michigan's gone up against an elite post scorer this year, unless you want to count Frank Kaminsky, who turned into one because Michigan was trying to play a 6'6 guy on him.
Well, Brandon Ashley was pretty good with his back to the basket as well as facing up, but
and
he did pretty well and Michigan lost. So this furthers the point.
And then in terms of potential one seeds, obviously Wichita and Villanova are much more appealing just because they are not the other two teams.
Roving death machines.
And, you know, Wichita, I'm sure Wichita is very good, but just in terms of athleticism, I'm much more comfortable with Michigan going up against that than a Florida or an Arizona.
How do you feel about Virginia? Because that seems to be the one.
I would take Virginia because Virginia is another one of those slowed down, we're very defensively oriented teams. I know that
they are very slow.
They're incredibly slow.
Ungodly slow.
So, I mean, Michigan struggles in transition. I think that Virginia would be a good matchup for Michigan. I'm just looking at, you know, I don't want Duke. I don't want Florida. I don't want Arizona. I don't want Kentucky. And Creighton is on my no list, even though I've watched them lose their last couple games. So,
yeah, I think we're in pretty close agreement here. Creighton. I don't know. It's just the possibility of Doug McDermott just scoring like 45 in that game.
Or just raggy like that guy. Yeah. I mean, bearded lumberjack 3-point assassin? No thanks.
Yeah.
No thank you.
There's no need. No need for having to sweat out that.
Oof. So, we are pro Big Ten tourney victory, anti Duke, Arizona, Florida, New Mexico, Kentucky, Creighton, and pro Cuse, Wichita, Nova, Iowa State, Cincinnati, and of course VCU.
Yep.
Da, 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 da. We call Jamie?
Let's call Jamie.
All right. Pour the heart on the wings of a blaster night. Busted my guts on a riot dose of paradise. Ran a red-blooded daughter slow like gunfire run fast. Rinse a blitzkrieg love and a rolling candle kiss. We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing all right, guys. I'm a little bummed out though. I thought there were people out there in the blogosphere that did NIT mock brackets. I can't find any this morning. I'm trying to figure out if my Hoosiers are going to be in a road game or a home game to start that tournament out.
Well, at least it was a quality loss, Jamie. So you know,
yeah,
that probably moved them up a little bit.
That should help. That should help. You know, I think that should help. But I've been worried all along that they're going to have to go to like Terre Haute or something and get crushed by Indiana State. So if they can avoid that fate, I'll be happy, I guess.
So, I mean, when this game happens, you kind of make a decision based on who it matters more for. Is that correct?
I've definitely done that in the past. You know, I've definitely done that in the past because in the late 90s, for example, there were some moments where both teams were on the bubble, or one was just on the bubble and one didn't even have a shot. There were some moments like that, actually, in the Mike Davis tenure where Indiana needed wins over Michigan.
Well, what's it like now?
Well, actually, yesterday I wanted, there was more of me that kind of wanted Michigan to win because of the whole Jordan Morgan factor. I mean, there were a couple really good pieces on him, one on your site, and that kind of caught up to me. It would have been interesting had Indiana beaten Nebraska on Wednesday, though. I would have had to have been, you know, top to bottom Hoosier, because that would have actually, because of how weak the bubble is and with those four extra bids these last few years, that actually would have put them in play.
Alas.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, but man.
But I had a hard time watching Indiana hit all those shots early on because, you know, where had that been, you know, all year? I mean, you know, play offense like that against Penn State and Northwestern at home, and you'd actually be in the discussion. You know, so part of me was sort of like, it was like that 2-point play at the end of the Michigan bowl game when Indiana was like 9 for 9 at the start. I was just like, great, good time for 9 and 9.
What are you doing?
The hell, Jamie?
Jamie, we don't want to think about that. We're done thinking about that.
It's true. That's your spring football update on the podcast.
Oh,
right
God.
There.
Oh man.
Should we just hang up on him right now? No. All right. So,
but it was a great, great win by Michigan. Great exclamation point to a Big Ten championship season that, you know, could very well be in the top 10 as far as Big Ten regular season championships that I've seen in my lifetime. I wrote a quick list down this morning, and I came up with 12, including this one that you would probably, you know, use to, you know, that would be the contenders to rate from 1 to 12. And you know, they're in the team photo, and that's pretty impressive given who they lost to the NBA last year, given how they kind of had to make this team over on the fly a little bit this year. It was a fun night. And it looked like there was a big celebration going on, too.
It was quite a celebration afterwards.
Yeah. You don't get that often in sports. You got to take advantage of that. It looked like it was a fun night for everybody involved.
Yeah, I spent that time watching Michigan lose to State in hockey, but we're not going to talk about that either.
now who's bringing the bad news?
Yeah. Jamie, you're an Indiana guy. What is the feeling about Crean right now? I mean, he seems to be recruiting well, but this is obviously a bigger come down than people expected from last year's team.
I think the attitude towards Crean is at an all-time low. You know, it was a rough, I guess if you gauge things by, you know, blog chat rooms and all that stuff, it was a really long off season. I mean, Crean took a lot of heat for the team not making the Final Four last year and kind of going out, you know, as pathetically as they did against Syracuse. So coming back this year, you know, and not having any offense, can't shoot, a lot of turnovers. You know, I think a lot of people are disappointed in Crean. And you know, if Brad Stevens was still coaching up at Butler, I would suspect there would be some sort of, you know, Brad Stevens for Indiana blog already started.
I'm surprised there isn't one anyway.
Well, that's true. But, you know, his shadow's not there, you know, winning NCAA tournament games. Or, you know, Butler came into last place this year, for example, in the Big East. You know, if he was still there and they were 11-5 in that league, you know, that's a shadow, right?
Definitely. Jamie, we want to get your take on something we discussed in a previous segment, which is, you know, we're coming up on the NCAA tournament and people are making a lot of brackets, and you look at a bracket and you're like, I like that one, I don't like that one. Who do you want? Who do you want to avoid?
Oh, for Michigan?
Yes. Not Indiana. Not Indiana.
Not relevant, Jamie.
Yeah, for Indiana, I'll take anyone, right? No. Boy, that's always a tough question, because I think once you get to the Sweet 16, anybody is pretty tough. I think there are some teams out there that, and the other thing is there's teams out there that have all this NBA talent, you know, or parts that are NBA talent, and you're just like, oh, yeah, wow, we're Michigan, you know, we don't, and then you're like, wait a minute, actually Michigan does bring future NBA players to the table too. So I, you know, to me, I think once you get to the Sweet 16, it's are you on or are you off, and it's not really about matchups.
What?
You know, I mean, I really do. I mean, I think it's just so balanced this year.
Wait.
I mean, look at how many teams have kind of ebbed and flowed from being a one or two seed or not. And I just don't, you know, I don't know. I just don't think there necessarily is a bad matchup. Or I think there are teams that are good matchups for Michigan, like teams that rely on turning you over, for example. I think there are more teams that are good matchups for Michigan than there would be bad matchups.
I just want to make it clear, the Indiana fan who watched the Syracuse NCAA tournament game last year said Sweet 16 matchups don't matter.
Well, I'm also talking specifically about this year. but also I don't think Michigan can get, I mean, is Syracuse has a D that's really tough to attack, but I don't really think there's a D out there that Michigan's offense can attack.
All right.
This
is too wishy-washy. I'm going to give you teams, and you're going to say yes or no.
Oh, that would be better. That would be better, especially since I'm not looking at a bracket or anything.
Kentucky, as a 7 seed.
Oh, just on the beeline factor alone, I take Michigan.
Oh, no. This is like whether you would like to see them as a 7 seed.
Yes.
Yes, wow. New Mexico as a 7 seed.
New Mexico as a 7 seed, yes, I just watched them totally choke away a game last night against San Diego State, and Mountain West teams have not performed well in these tournaments, despite the fact that some of them have put together some good seasons and good seeds, so yes to that, too.
We're assuming Michigan is a 2 in this, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Creighton is a 3.
Creighton is a 3. No, only because in a 2-3 game, well, that is
the correct answer, Jamie. No elaboration is necessary.
God, Doug McDermott could go for 40 points, and what are you going to do, right?
Everybody says Doug McDermott, but they don't remember what Raggy did to Villanova. Oh, my God.
Jeez. I mean, holy moly.
Syracuse is a 3.
Hmm.
Have you not watched Syracuse this year, Jamie?
Or at least in the last 2 weeks?
I like that matchup. I think Michigan is playing better than they were a year ago, and I think they handled that zone better. And yeah, Syracuse is just—they're kind of gassing it down the stretch. I like that. If that's a 2-3 matchup, though, be prepared for 4 days of you know what Boeheim's record is against Beeline head to head. But that's just—I just don't think that's relevant. So many worthless Canisius versus Syracuse and West Virginia versus Syracuse give, but you'll get that record because we got that record all year last year in the lead up to the Final Four.
And then Michigan beat them.
I don't think that's relevant.
VCU is a 7, which I think you know everybody knows the answer to that, right?
Yeah, that's you nailed that. You nailed that last year about a month before the tournament.
As San Diego State as a 3.
Oh, yes, just for narrative alone, right?
And you did make the point that the Mountain West has not done as well in the tournament as their seeds would indicate.
And it's really been, I think, one of the more disappointing things the last couple of years because they put together some really solid regular seasons. And, you know, I mean, 1 year they put 5 teams into the dance, and they have 12 teams this year in the Mountain West, and they haven't performed as well in the regular season by the metrics as the last couple of years. So, yeah, I just don't think they're as big of a factor.
Duke is a 3.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think that's a tough game. We saw earlier in the year that they really throttled Michigan's offense a little bit.
At Cameron.
At Cameron, that's true.
Before Nisauskas beasted up.
Yeah.
But I still don't want him.
I mean, yeah, that's just a game. You know what? That's a game that I think it's great that Michigan could actually, you know, I mean, after watching this NCAA tournament for the last 20, you know, seemingly for the longest time without Michigan being a factor, the fact that they can actually be in a 50-50 game against Duke in the regionals is just, I mean, hey, take your chances with that game, right?
Yeah, but in terms of the other 3 seeds, Duke's, like, the one I do not want to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Jabari Parker could carry them all the way Carmelo did, to Syracuse. I mean, he's just that good. And, wow, that's a rough 3 seed, isn't it?
That is a rough 3 seed, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And then the other potential 3 seeds are Iowa State and Cincinnati.
I'd like another swing at Iowa State if I were from a Michigan standpoint. You know, I mean, that Michigan was there in that game, and they just didn't have the final gear those last few minutes.
Well, and they just bricked a ton of wide open threes in that game, I remember.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, Michigan's, Michigan's developed a great final gear here these last 2 months. They've developed a great knockout punch these last 2 months. I'd like that again. I'd like to see that. I think I'd like to see that rematch as opposed to the Duke rematch. And Cincinnati, I mean, they've exceeded all expectations this year. Every time I expect that they're going to be playing a tough team from the American, that they'll show that they're not as good, they keep producing. But I just think that's a team that that their ceiling is just to get out of that first weekend. You know, I think Michigan would win pretty handily against Cincinnati.
And then the 4-1 seeds, Arizona, Florida, Wichita State, and probably Villanova at this instant. Which are your preferred regions?
Well, Billy Donovan's not going to guard Nick Stauskas like he did last year. I'll take Florida.
You want Florida?
Well, if Billy Donovan won't guard Nick Stauskas. Don't you remember that after that game? You know, they left him wide open because he didn't think he could hit those shots.
Well,
that's what he said in the press conference.
I think that they may have changed their opinion on that. And
right, right.
Are you saying that, like, you want Florida again as the one seed in Michigan's
over
region?
Say Wichita State?
No, I mean of those teams, I think Villanova and Wichita are the most desirable. I mean, you know, you said something about Creighton beating Villanova, you know, earlier. I think Michigan's a team that could just blitz them as well. And you know, Wichita, I mean, I definitely don't want to play them, but I mean, if you get them as a one seed, you've got them. I mean, they're a tough. They're a very tough team. You know, they actually played Louisville better last year in the Final Four than Michigan did. You could make a case for that. They were up 11 in the second half. You know, I mean,
and Cleanthony early.
Are any of those teams really easy? I mean, if Michigan's playing one of them in a regional championship game 3 weeks from today, I mean, we'd all take it. And I like Michigan's chances in any of them if they're there. You know, we saw them against Arizona earlier in the year. They almost beat them. Granted, that was at Chrysler. They beat Florida last year in the same spot, and Wichita and Villanova might not be as battle tested.
Well, that is a. That
I
is
mean,
a,
who? What's your? Who, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, who are you thinking if they are in a 1-2 game against those teams? I mean, those three of those teams have been up in the top five like all year. I mean, they've shown very little weakness.
I don't want Michigan to go up against Arizona,
yeah.
And Florida is kind of in that bucket too, just because they've got the kind of guys who can exploit Michigan's lack of size. They can really get to that 6'6" power forward a little bit better than some of the other teams.
And they're just so good. I mean, they're 8th in offense and 9th in defense on KenPom.
Right.
It's just a strong all-around team.
And that Arizona game, probably Michigan was fortunate to be in it the whole way because they missed 10 putbacks or something. Like, they just could not
number.
They could not finish after their infinite number of offensive rebounds. And
again,
I think
that's a game on Michigan's home court.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it might be one of the only times this year that you felt as it was going on that Michigan was playing a little bit
over its
above
head.
Their heads,
yeah.
Maybe just, you know, by leading that game and taking control of it for as long stretches as they did. I mean, it just felt like, you know, that was their possible best effort against Arizona.
Yeah, let's talk about the league a little bit. Iowa is kind of collapsing, and there are a lot of mad Iowa fans on Twitter after they looked like a top 10 team early in the season, but they've still made a considerable leap forward. I mean, they are, what, a 7-8-9 seed? After not being in the tournament for almost a decade, they're kind of where Michigan was a few years ago.
Although they did just finish with the exact same record as last year, which Iowa fans have pointed out, yes.
Well, their non-conference schedule last year was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was the same 9-9 Big Ten mark. But it's just, you know, it's if you look at that, they
same,
don't look
same
like they
20-11 regular season watch, mark, too.
Yeah.
Wow. But, I mean, they really stepped up the non-conference opponents this year.
They did. They had five top 100 opponents.
Yeah.
You know, in some way, they remind me of, I mean, not, in just from an evolution standpoint, they reminded me of the first Indiana team that Crean had that was any good. They ended up, I think, 11-7, maybe 10-8 in the Big Ten, but they were just maddeningly inconsistent. You know, like, they would show their A game, and they're like, wow, they could beat anybody, and then they'd go out and, you know, lose at a really bad Nebraska team. And it just feels like that's what Iowa has been doing from pretty much mid-January on. And they entered the postseason, and the only teams they've beaten in the last month are Penn State and Purdue.
Yeah, wow. That does not say good things. I mean, Iowa fans on Twitter have been talking about that they've gone to a zone, and that has just been completely shredded. But in some of those games, like, Iowa's just not getting down the court. In transition defense, their game against Indiana was disgusting on defense.
Yeah.
I mean, just I can't believe that Fran didn't explode at his team because he's Fran and they're doing that. Like, I thought we were going to see the first coach technical for yelling at his own players.
Well, and you talk about that game, the game before against Minnesota, they gave up 95 points on 72 possessions.
Oh, God. I mean, what happened to them? They're huge. I mean,
There's no reason for them to be a poor defensive team.
Man.
They've got experience. They're a long team. I don't get it. But then you go out there and you see Mike Gesell give up that foul at the end of the game last night, and you're like, well, maybe.
What was he doing?
I think he just – it wasn't intentional, I don't think. He was just – he was trying to stay in front of him, and he just couldn't, and then he grabbed.
If it wasn't intentional, man.
I think he just got shook out of his shoes. I think,
it looked like he was trying to take a foul.
Because Abrams sauced him.
What does Mike Gesell think who does he think he is?
And I just don't get why he's guarding Tracy Abrams right. That close to the top of the key in that situation, because Abrams is a terrible shooter.
He's an awful shooter. I don't know. They look like a dumb team. They kind of look like Indiana.
No, and then they forget to guard like Illinois' good shooter, and he drains the winning shot because of course he does.
That was tough. That was like a hand in the face kind of.
It was a little late, though. I mean, he got a nice look for a three-point shooter in a late clock end-of-game situation like that. They're not good at defense.
No, they're not.
So, speaking from someone who's watched a lot of bad defense this year.
Well,
yeah, they've fallen. It looks like they're going to be the sixth seed either way in the Big Ten tournament. And I have no clue if they're going to give a good or a bad, if that's going to be a good or a bad matchup at all for whoever they draw in the quarterfinals. Because they can beat anybody, but they're just.
I'm glad they're on the other side of the bracket.
You mentioned that they remind you a little bit of Indiana. I mean, in a way, they play so many guys, and sometimes they just, don't know what to do and who to do it with, on the offensive end. And I don't know if Giselle is really all that good of a player. I mean, the ball's in his hands a lot as their de facto point guard, and I don't know about him. I don't know about him. He's looked a little overmatched at times. He could have won the Michigan State game for him at Carver Hawkeye, and he sort of couldn't come through down the stretch. So I don't know about him. I like Marble, but he kind of has stretches where he's, sort of off. Of course, he crushed Michigan, though. But they haven't had an impressive outing since then.
Yeah, Michigan is very prone to just get rained on by teams that then go and do nothing.
Yeah.
it's a little bit alarming.
But, I mean, this is a team that we thought could actually compete for the Big Ten title. And at one point they were 8-4, and after that Michigan win, they actually, I mean, obviously they would need some help on the scoreboard, but they really weren't in bad position to still compete for top honors, and they just went in another direction.
Yeah, their schedule even set up pretty nicely down the stretch, and they just couldn't take advantage of it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and then Ohio State is just kind of calcified into what they are. They're the same team they were last year, except there's no Deshaun Thomas. I mean, they're going to be a 6 or 7, and it's really hard to see them beating a good team to get to the Sweet 16. It just doesn't seem like they've got the offense.
Yeah, they had a nice run. They won 6 of 7, but they've also sort of regressed to that earlier form. When they sort of had some shaky losses, to Nebraska and Penn State, because here down the stretch they've lost to Penn State and Indiana. So. They sort of had like a final stand where, because remember last year, didn't they win like their final 8 or 9 to close the season out? For a while, you're like, oh, hey, wait, maybe they're catching it, and then they lose to Penn State again. I think it was the first time Penn State had swept somebody in like 5 or 6 years in Big Ten play.
Yeah.
And then they followed up with a loss to Indiana. And it looks like a possible 5-4 game in the Big Ten tournament with Nebraska, maybe.
Yep.
It's hard to look at the Big Ten tournament brackets because
it's not quite set, but for Michigan's purposes, it's pretty much Indiana or Illinois in the first round, Nebraska or Ohio State in the second round, and then you'd assume Michigan State or Wisconsin in the final if they are fortunate enough to get that far, he said.
I like that bracket for Michigan.
It's a great bracket for Michigan. I didn't want to see Iowa on that side, and you kind of knew that Michigan State and Wisconsin were going to be 2 and 3, so they would get avoided. The only thing, Indiana is apparently a pretty bad matchup for Michigan in the first round, although Illinois has been playing better, so they could win that.
And with how Michigan kind of figured out that going through the 1-3-1 in the second half was worth it, I think in a tournament matchup, they'd probably go to that earlier.
Well, you don't win a whole lot of games where the opponent shoots 71% from two.
No, but they did.
That's true. And then Michigan State, of course, beset by injury. They had the tragedy of having Russell Bird get ejected from a game, which I hope makes all the lists. They are healthy-ish. I mean, Appling revealed that his wrist has been totally fine for forever. After they talked about shutting him down for the season, and just like, that's a soap opera over there. But they are together now and healthy, and they've probably dropped down to the 4 or 5 line at this point.
There's also the storyline that his wrist hurt him so badly that now that it's healthy, he's forgotten what it's like to shoot with a healthy wrist.
There was
the little mini storyline, I think, earlier in the week, too, in advance of their final home game.
It's if those guys don't have pro basketball careers waiting for them, they can always work for Russian public relations. But they are healthy, and Dawson is doing Dawson things, and the fact that he's got a bandage on one of his hands doesn't matter because he never shot anyway. So they are a little bit improved defensively, although they get everybody back, and they have an awful loss to Illinois. Just awful loss.
At home,
where they score a total of 46 points, and then they go and they blow Iowa off the court. So it's who knows exactly what's going on there, especially because Iowa has been flailing as well. So obviously a dangerous team, but it's hard to project them outperforming their seed particularly much, right?
Yeah, and you know they lost in the Sweet 16 round each of the last 2 years, and you know I think if they end up as a 4 seed, they're headed right to that again. I just always had a problem with this team as a true contender, mostly because of the Appling factor. I mean, he's a 25% 3-point shooter over his last 56 Big Ten games, and I just, you know, we have all these great stats and all these great metrics, but I just, sometimes it's as simple as I don't like guards that can't shoot, and they've got one and they rely a lot on him. And I think that against your better teams, as you get to that part of the tournament, I think they're just going to come up short.
Yeah. I mean, they don't,
but they could, go ahead.
No, I mean, they seem like a team that could put everything together, and then they do have the talent and the experience, but they haven't really played like it, even when Payne got back. I mean, Payne had 4 points in that Illinois game. It's just, they're not all there.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, they do have a lot to gain this weekend. If they put it together and win the Big Ten tournament, they could, you know, they could jump a couple seed lines just on the whole, hey, they haven't been healthy, you know, Izzo factor type of thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, here we're talking about them drawing a 1 seed in the regional semis and going out. All of a sudden, they're in a more even matchup. And whatnot. So they've got a lot to gain, and jumping around here, but obviously Wisconsin, maybe even Michigan, can even climb the seed lines if they win this weekend.
I would say for State, I mean, we talked about this with Michigan and how we no longer want this to happen, but in terms of a team that could potentially benefit from an early exit from the Big Ten tournament, Michigan State, I mean, Adrian Payne during the Michigan game was walking around the entire time with his hands on his knees. Like, that guy is still working his way into shape and is just struggling to get through games right now.
I'm having a weird sense of deja vu.
Yeah.
Because
a team gets gassed really easily.
We've done a podcast where you talked about this exact thing before. It was last year because Payne, like, hey, he's got tiny lungs or something, and that was the excuse last year.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's just an ongoing problem, but I think they could use for him to get a little bit of a rest in there. I know they want their team to kind of come back together and play with all of their pieces a little bit so that they have that going again before the tournament, but it also seems like an early exit wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing for them.
I like Jamie's theory, though. Like, popping up from a 4 to a 3 or even a 2 by winning a tournament
would be huge for them.
Is a real big difference.
I just don't see this team right now winning the tournament, winning the Big Ten tournament.
I think if they exit early and don't play up to their Big Ten tournament seed, they could drop even another seed line. Although that could just be the difference between a 4 and a 5, you know, and you're playing the same type of second-round game anyway. But
yeah, there's a big leap from 4 to 3, but there's not really much of one from 4 to 5.
Yeah.
No.
I never quite could figure out what the right answer is to the whole conference tournament. You know, do you want to win it? Is it easier to rest? I know that's always the silver lining if your team, goes out early on Friday or Saturday. It's like, hey, we get a little bit more rest, but I've never quite figured out, it, you know, handicapping conference tournaments is as goofy sometimes as handicapping the bowl games, trying to guess, you know, guess the differences of motivations between the teams, you know, and whatnot. I mean, is Michigan going to come with a lot of with fire, you know, after closing out an impressive Big Ten season, you know, or, you know, who knows?
Well, we talked about this earlier in the podcast. Somebody put together a nice diary on the site about what Big Ten champions had done in the tournament over the past decade. Actually, it was probably for the entirety of the thing. And it split pretty evenly between met seed level expectations and didn't. So there doesn't seem to be a major effect from actually winning the thing. So you might as well do it and then boost your seed up so that you get easier opponents.
And I think that it's I think that's also more of a fan argument, too. I think in locker rooms of these teams, I think they look at it as another trophy and another banner to get. You know, I don't, you know, but that's just like the, one of the sports narratives of our day. You know, is it, does the rest help? Does the team need, you know, it's almost as silly, does a team need to lose, you know, before the tournament, that kind of thing.
The Wichita State argument, which is so dumb.
Yeah, I was in a place where there was First Take on a television that was muted, and I was still getting enraged.
What, was there closed captioning?
No, there was not. It's just, you just look at these people, and you're just like, oh, my God. Anyway, we're talking about positive things today, except for the negative things, but we're keeping it.
We're really trying
we're
to
trying.
Lean positive.
We're being very positive.
some interesting Big Ten tournament numbers. You know, I mean, Michigan as a one seed, you know, this is probably the first time since they won it in the inaugural Big Ten tournament season that, you know, you enter thinking that they actually, you know, might win it, or the expectation is to at least be, you know, in the final. When the tournament first started, it was really bad news to be the number one seed. There were 4 1-and-dones by the number one seed in the first 6 years, and they only had a 4-5 overall winning mark. But since then, it's been it's turned around. The number one seed chalk has really, at least from a straight up standpoint, done well. 24-4 overall, the number one seed the last 10 years, and 8 times out of the last 10 years they've at least made the finals.
Well, if there was ever a year that was not going to be the case, it would be this year. Maybe not necessarily in Michigan's case, but we're assuming that the higher seeds get through this tournament, and that is by no means assured. I mean, the Big Ten is full of blood and spiders. There's no gimme games in this conference. I mean, it's not as good as it was last year, but it is deeper.
Yeah, the bottom end is definitely raised up.
I mean, when Northwestern is the worst team in the conference and they go to Indiana and win, they go to Iowa. They went to Minnesota and won. I mean, it's just there are no gimmies.
Yeah, well, and the one seed has been the only chalk that's really held up here over the last 10 years or so. You know, the last 2 years, actually, we've had 1-4 and 2-3 in the semifinals, but that had never happened before until the last 2 years. And, yeah, it just does look like it's so balanced now in the middle that should revert to form. But we've had 6-7 matchups in the semifinals. We've had a 10-6 matchup in the semifinal in recent years. We very rarely, until these last 2 years, have had a 2-3 matchup in the semifinal.
Well, you heard it here first. Michigan-Penn State. Big Ten final.
You know, Northwestern also beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin this year. So,
but they're on our side of the bracket.
They are. So that won't happen.
Well, Northwestern and Purdue are playing, I think, as we talk, for last place.
They are.
And I'm kind of pulling for Northwestern to lose because I think a possible Northwestern-Ohio State 5-12 game could be very fun. It might be, you know, might end up...
What, like 12-13 final?
Yes, and Northwestern might win it.
Good Lord. Jamie, that is horrifying.
That's grim.
That is Lovecraftian.
Yeah. Oh, I think Ohio State would probably end up doing away with Purdue, but I like the fight of Northwestern. Plus, I think that would be a glorious way for Aaron Kraft to end his Big Ten career, losing to Northwestern. But losing to Michigan in a semifinal game would be just as fun, or losing to Nebraska in the quarterfinals. Do you guys think Nebraska is making the tournament? They have a big game tonight against Wisconsin.
I think that they can probably make it if they lose to Wisconsin and then win their first-round tournament game in the Big Ten. I think that would be enough.
Yeah, it seems like
the bubble
two
is
more,
so
one or two
soft.
More. Yeah.
So soft.
Yeah, they have a really good chance, win or lose against this Wisconsin game, to get to the Big Ten semifinals.
Yeah,
that would be probably enough to overcome a Wisco loss. But the only loss they've had at home was that one pointer to Michigan.
Yep.
The real bold Derek Walton take to the goal, and you know, I'm really looking forward to this game tonight. It's too bad we can't really talk about a result because we don't know it.
But yeah, I think that's going to be
a real fun way to end the Big Ten regular season tonight.
It will be. So,
and are you guys Tim Miles fans? Like
everybody's
Tim Miles. Tim Miles.
I know. I mean, he's just he's interesting. He's fun.
Like, compare him to every other coach in the conference except Beilein, and he's a thousand times more likable than all of them.
Oh, Fran McCaffrey.
Or Fran. I forgot Fran. But yeah, Tim Miles is awesome, and I root for Nebraska simply because I want him to succeed.
Yeah,
but
they have a tournament drought about as long as what Michigan's was when Beilein snapped that, and they have never won an NCAA tournament game. I don't know if that's common knowledge or not, but they have never won an NCAA tournament game.
Wow. Ever. Well, yeah. Tim Miles. I mean, they don't really lose much this year, so next year you're going to see them projected to be in the tourney beforehand.
Yeah.
I mean, they lose Gallegos, and that's about it. That's literally it. They're going to be good.
And his Colorado State trajectory was, you know, he had a team that just missed the tournament, and then they took off and made the tournament. And I think that they're kind of right in that wheelhouse right now. Except I think this year they're going to make the tournament, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, they're going to have some expectations on them next year, but you know, they've When they came into the league, I don't think anybody expected them to be a factor in basketball
ever,
you know, at all.
Yeah.
And look at, it's crazy. And it's happened even though the league is still strong.
It is true. So they made the right hire. I mean, they were going nowhere last year with just a bunch of seniors, and now they've got a future and a present. So that's a pretty good trick in year two. All right,
and their women's basketball team has been pretty good too. Actually,
they are currently playing in the Big Ten final. So Jamie, we will call you up next week, probably on Monday after the seeding has, and we'll have a seeding and selection show. But it was good talking to you, and we will talk to you later.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender along with Brian Cook. And thank you, JMO. That's it.